Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, January 23rd, 2026. We begin first with page one, where the main story is about a local business headlined New Chapter in the Killarney Story. New owners make few changes and keep the vibe of the downtown Irish pub. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Madeline and Dylan Coate, originally of Kankakee, are the proud new owners of Killarney's Irish Pub in downtown Bloomington. The couple took over the bar, located at 523 North Main Street, in August 2024 from former owner Tony Fabrizio. "We did not want to change a whole lot. Tony, he made this place great. We want to keep that name living on," Madeline Coate said. She attended Illinois State University for her undergraduate and graduate studies. While she was in school, she came to work at the bar for about 2 years, and she said it was a great experience. After she finished school, she was working full-time as an appraiser when she learned that Fabrizio was selling Killarney's after almost 20 years. She talked to her husband, who was a real estate investor, about buying the bar and eventually made it happen, she said. Dan Shea opened Killarney's in 1988, and Fabrizio worked as the manager before buying it in 1996. He continued to operate it as an Irish pub, but the building at 532 North Main has housed several different businesses throughout its history. The bar has been called JJ's and Heidi Ho's, and the building once operated as a funeral home. Since the Coates took over, "We've changed a few things, gotten a few new products, and gotten rid of some, but besides that, it's really been the same," Madeline Coates said. "They want to keep the same warm atmosphere that customers liked before," she said. "They just can come in here and still remember, you know, all the memories from Killarney's before." Coates said they are aiming to offer a different special for each day that the bar is open, which is currently Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The bar offers deals on Red Bull on Tuesdays, Dr. McGillicuddy on Thursdays, Fireball on Fridays, and Jack Daniels on Saturdays. Coates said that they also try to be consistent with deals on domestic beer and aim to spotlight the Irish beer selection. They also added a few new whiskeys to the lineup, including the very fitting Killarney Irish Whiskey. "It's kind of a little bit of the best of both worlds. You can come in, you can sit, have conversation, you can play card games, just have a great time with friends," she said. "There's plenty of room, you know. The college students get up and dance and have fun, but we also draw some of the regular town crowd as well during our happy hours. We get a wide variety of customers, which is nice, so we're able to kind of appease to both sectors." Coates said the biggest draw for customers is a selection of drafts, most notably the recent return of Guinness since installing a new keg system. Killarney's also features local beer from Keg Grove, as well as the usual domestics like Bud Light and Miller Lite. And while the bar does not have a kitchen, Coates said they partner with local businesses and other organizations from time to time to offer food. That includes a recent collaboration with Brass Pig Smoke and Ale House and El Bandido Yankee Tequila to host a taco and tequila night. Killarney's bartenders also created a mocktail and cocktail to raise money for the Humane Society of Central Illinois, and the Irish Pub won for Best Drink. Coates said she would love to continue fostering community partnerships. In the future, they would also like to use the space upstairs, which used to operate as an apartment building, but has not been used in years. Coates said they are hoping to help bring in another business there, whether it be apartments or a restaurant, because bringing more business to downtown Bloomington is her and her husband's biggest priority. In true Killarney's fashion, the Coates will also continue the tradition of the annual St. Patrick's Day celebration, which they plan to host on Saturday, March 14th, since the holiday falls on Tuesday this year. They will have corned beef, Irish beer, and, of course, bagpipers. Coates said she encourages people to come to Killarney's and try some of the new beers or grab their favorite and visit other downtown bars and establishments too. And while she never thought she and her husband would own this long-established downtown bar, she said, "I just enjoyed, you know, interacting with everyone, hearing people's stories. I really enjoyed working here. So it's very fun that, you know, we are a part of the Killarney story." And in a sidebar, some facts are included about the Killarney's Irish Pub. It's located at 523 North Main Street in Bloomington, and its hours on Tuesday and Thursday are 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., on Friday, 4 p.m. to 2 a.m., on Saturday, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., and it is closed Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. It also has a Facebook site. Our next front page story is about U.S. weather. Headlined, "Massive Winter Storm Coming, 140 million Face Potentially Crippling Snow and Ice." This is an Associated Press story, datelined Atlanta. Bread was flying off the shelves, salt was being loaded onto trucks, and utility workers were nervously watching forecasts Thursday as a huge winter storm that could bring catastrophic damage, widespread power outages, and bitterly cold weather was barreling toward the eastern two-thirds of the U.S. The massive storm system is expected to bring a crippling ice storm from Texas through parts of the South, potentially around a foot of snow from Oklahoma through Washington, D.C., New York, and Boston, and then a final punch of bitterly cold air that could drop wind chills to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit in parts of Minnesota and North Dakota. Forecasters are warning the damage, especially in areas that get a large amount of ice, could rival a hurricane. About 140 million people were under winter storm or cold weather watches or warnings, and in many places, both. The storm was expected to begin Friday in New Mexico and Texas, and then the worst of the weather will move east into the deep South before heading up the coast and thumping New England with snow. The cold punch coming after means it will take a while to thaw out, an especially dangerous prospect in places where ice and snow weigh down tree branches and power lines and cut electricity, perhaps for days. Roads and sidewalks could remain icy well into next week. Freezing temperatures are expected all the way to Florida, and lows in the north and Midwest will get about as cold as possible, even down to minus 25 or 30 degrees Fahrenheit, forecasters said. Winter storms can be notoriously tricky to forecast. 1 or 2 degrees can mean the difference between a catastrophe or a cold rain, and forecasters said the places with the worst weather can't be pinned down until the event starts. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp declared a state of emergency in his state, like many other governors, while acknowledging Thursday morning some forecasts have disastrous levels of wintry weather in Atlanta, while others have the Deep South's largest city mostly spared. That line could move north or south, depending on what the temperatures do and what that could throw at us, Kemp said. Kemp said being prepared no matter what means where the line ends up won't matter as much. Go ahead and fill your cars up. Make sure you've got the things that you need at your house to stay warm, and hunker down in case you lose power for a day or two, the governor said. All 275 of ice melting salt sold out at Bates Hardware in Atlanta in one morning, manager Lewis Payne said. He made special trips to the warehouse to restock, but it's selling out elsewhere, everywhere. Wendy Chambers stopped by the store to pick up batteries and flashlights in case there's a power outage. "We're going to be prepared, aren't we? We're going to be able to read, do things, play games," she said, before heading to church choir with her granddaughter. Brine trucks were already treating roads from Oklahoma to Tennessee, with more states expected to begin treating roads as the start of the storm gets closer. College sports teams moved up or postponed games, and the Texas Rangers canceled their annual Fan Fest event. The city of Carmel, Indiana, canceled its winter games out of fear that residents could get frostbite and hypothermia competing in the ice trike relay and human curling, in which people slide down a skating rink on inner tubes. And here is a sidebar from Lincoln that says, "The last of normal January temperatures has ended for the next few days. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a cold weather advisory beginning at 3 a.m. Friday until noon Saturday for most of central Illinois. Wind chills as low as minus 10 to minus 25 are expected, according to meteorologists. The dangerously cold wind chills as low as 25 below zero could cause frostbite on exposed skin in as little as 30 minutes, the Weather Service warned. Use caution while traveling outside. Wear appropriate clothing, a hat, and gloves. The hazardous temperature conditions are expected to continue throughout the weekend, along with the bitterly cold conditions, which is expected through Tuesday. A 60% chance of snow could accumulate more than 2 inches. And this next sidebar lists various places for shelter. It is a little bit long, but I feel that it is important, depending on where you live, to hear where there are places of shelter. As McLean County prepares for frigid temperatures, the following warming centers and other resources are available to keep residents safe. Warming centers in Bloomington: the Bloomington Public Library on East Olive Street, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 Friday and Saturday, and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. The Connect Transit Bus at the northeast corner of West Washington Street and North Roosevelt Avenue in front of the former Pantograph Building. The Walmart at 2225 West Market Street in Bloomington, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. And in Normal, Meyer at 1900 East College Avenue, 6 a.m. to midnight. The Normal Public Library at 206 West College Avenue, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. The Uptown Station at 11 Uptown Circle, the first floor, open daily and closes with the last train at 9 p.m. And in McLean County, the Bellflower Community Center at 104 West Center Street, enter through the double doors on the northeast side and call Esten Ellis, 309-530-4418, for assistance. The Downs Fire Department at 102 West Main Street, open 24 hours. The Love's Travel Center at 505 South Persimmon Drive in Leroy, open 24 hours. The Leroy Police Department on East Street, stop by or call to request assistance. The Road Ranger Truck Stop at 312 East Dixie Road in McLean, open 24 hours. Residents in Arrowsmith, Shenoah, Cooksville, Hayworth, Hudson, Lexington, Saybrook, Stanford, Tawanda, and elsewhere in McLean County should call the MetCom non-emergency number at 309-888-5030 for assistance. And homeless shelters: the Salvation Army Safe Harbor at 208 North Oak Street in Bloomington. Shelter opens 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. for residents. The emergency winter shelter is open for residents through March 31st, providing additional beds and services. For those who are not residents but need to get out of the cold, the safety net is open 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. in the lobby, with snacks, drinks, restrooms, and blankets available. And the Home Sweet Home Ministries at 303 East Oakland Avenue in Bloomington, open 24 hours. The Junction at Home Sweet Home Ministries at 301 East Oakland Avenue, open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. And Project Oz serves homeless youth ages 17 to 23. Call PATH at 309-827-4005 and asked them to page Project Oz on-call staff. And our last front page story is about local government headlined Logan County Eyes Rules for Data Center. This story is datelined Lincoln. Proposed Logan County zoning changes that would accommodate the construction of a controversial data center were offered to the public for comment on Wednesday. Roughly 50 members of the public attended a special hearing of the County Zoning and Economic Development Committee. While the company planning the project pointed to economic benefits from taxes and new local jobs and limited demand for local water, public comments largely were against it. People also were invited to suggest revisions to the ordinance to provide greater accountability and protection. In December, representatives of Hut 8, a Miami-based digital infrastructure provider, presented a proposal for a 500-megawatt data center on 200 acres in the Latham area. Hut 8 officials said they estimated bringing 1,775 jobs to the county, 75 temporary pre-construction jobs at $130 an hour, 1,500 temporary jobs during the construction phase at $80 an hour, and 200 full-time operations jobs at $60 an hour. Peter Gohausen, director of energy origination for Hut 8, said in an email that the $60 an hour figure includes wages, benefits, and taxes. The company is looking for a large percentage of local hires by engaging with Lincoln Economic Advancement and Development, Inc., and the Greater Peoria Economic Development Council to reach out to both general and subcontractors within the region, he said. It is also coordinating with Normal-based Heartland Community College, which has a branch campus in Lincoln, about a joint reskilling program for students to become data center operations professionals. Because Logan County zoning ordinance does not contain specific regulations for data centers, the committee relied on Sangamon County's regulations as a starting point to draft its own policy on allowing them as a special use in agricultural districts. That draft was presented at Wednesday's hearing. Logan County Board Member Michael DeRoss, who chairs the Zoning and Economic Development Committee, welcomed audience suggestions, but advised attendees not to be too specific with their recommendations because it will make the ordinance much harder to revise. There is a method to the madness of a little vagueness, DeRoss said. One of the biggest concerns addressed by the public is the county's authority to regulate data centers, since the passage of the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act has mostly removed local government's authority to reject renewable energy and battery storage sites. The Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act, which was signed into law in January, allows the Illinois Commerce Commission to issue siting certificates to compliant wind, solar, or storage projects that may have been denied at the local level. This takes effect in June. Although data centers are exempt from the law as it currently reads, members of the public were concerned that these projects could be added to the law in the future, which could eliminate the county and its residents' ability to say no. In regard to transparency, DeRoss recommended that county officials, in addition to elected officials and paid staff of municipalities, cannot sign non-disclosure agreements for data center projects. Although committee members suggested a narrower time frame for approval of the zoning changes, opponents of the project insisted that public notice be given at least 60 days in advance of a vote or recommendation on approval of the project, and the draft ordinance also sets penalties for violations of its provisions. First violations of any provision is punishable by a civil penalty of no more than $25,000 for the first offense, $50,000 for the second offense, and $100,000 for the third and subsequent offenses. DeRoss said there currently is no maximum penalty, therefore audience members wanted the first fine to be much higher to set an example for a company establishing a multi $6 billion project in Logan County. However, DeRoss added that the ordinance requires legal review to make sure any costs are within reason. Data center projects often are controversial because of the amount of water they use, but HUD 8 officials say their usage would not be high. Construction of the center would only require water to supply the bathrooms, which are estimated to run at less than 9,000 gallons per day, according to a presentation from HUD 8. That 9,000 gallons per day is a conservative planning and design allowance used while the site plan and detailed plumbing and wastewater engineering are still being finalized, Gohausen wrote. Under normal operating conditions, we expect actual water use to be lower. This is due to the implementation of a closed-loop cooling system, which uses a fixed volume of coolant to absorb server heat. The coolant then travels to an outside radiator to cool down before returning to the servers and starting the recycling process again. An open-loop cooling system, in comparison, relies on a natural water source to absorb server heat. That system is estimated to lose about 2 billion gallons of water annually to evaporation, HUD 8 said. Gohausen said in an email response to questions from DeRoss that closed-loop systems are the industry standards for data centers of this scale. However, audience members called for further transparency, on the volume of coolant that would be discharged from the data center. DeRoss said the revised ordinance must also come before the county's Planning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals before returning to the Zoning and Economic Development Committee for a recommendation to the county board. Each meeting will have a public comment period for residents to weigh in on the ordinance. And for questions related to the data center project, you can email datacenter@logancountyil.gov or logancountydatacenter@hut8.com. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, District 87 Looks to BHS Gym Work. Dateline, Bloomington. Bloomington District 87's Board of Education approved proposed work on the south-facing facade of Bloomington High School's North Gym and heard the first proposal for work on the South Gym Wednesday night. The board approved the facade plans that are budgeted at $173,805 with Bethalto, Illinois-based GRP Wegman. This project will replace a significant area of window glass and metal paneling. The signed agreement says energy and operational savings from the project over a 20-year period will equal the cost of the project. The facade work was last proposed at the October 2025 board meeting, but it was not until recently that bids for the project's cost were available, said Chief Financial and Facilities Officer Michael Cornelli. Prices are coming in now, projects are coming in, he said. So looking for board approval for that particular project with the hopes that we could actually get started as soon as spring break. Proposed work on the South Gym would completely renovate locker room spaces for boys and girls, as well as create two Americans with Disabilities Act compliant entrances, make locker rooms ADA accessible, update flooring for sports areas, install air conditioning, and crucially, reduce the chance of flooding during heavy rains. The South Gym's current configuration, while not completely unreliable, has four drainage points that are inadequate. We are literally, each one of them, depending on something the size of a residential shower drain to be able to take water out of the interior building, said John Bishop, architect with the Farnsworth Group, who presented the plan. Renovations would also add ADA accessible entrances on both the upper and lower levels of the gym, as well as making showers and locker spaces ADA compliant. Early project cost projections are estimated at a total of $5.3 million over two phases, Cornelli said, with the first phase at $3 million and the second at $2.3 million. Last month, the board approved a proposal to include girls' flag football as a new sport, a move that requires renewed considerations for these locker room spaces, Cornelli said. Now we're all of a sudden considering implications of that in this space, he said. Board member Valita Harvey asked why Cornelli and the Farnsworth Group planned for two phases instead of lumping the work together or breaking it into three phases. The overall cost of $5.3 million, alongside the district's obligation to be good stewards of public tax dollars, pushed them to focus on a two-phase approach as the most efficient, Cornelli said. That phasing was really that effort to take this project and break it into realistic segments that the district can take on as we're generating county facility sales tax and really invest in that building that has not been touched for so long, he said. The board also recognized efforts of teachers across grades 1 through 8, increasing students' academic growth along all facets of scoring for reading and mathematics. In every area, there is growth from fall until winter. Some are pretty significant, said Director of Elementary Education Natalie Shoemaker. District 87 uses STAR math and reading assessments, computerized tests that are administered three times per semester to gauge students' progress in those areas of learning. Students in all six elementary schools and the junior high increased their scores above the 20th percentile of Illinois students across all levels, a point of pride for the district, said Superintendent David Mauser. As school districts, a lot of time we do a great job of highlighting athletics and those sorts of things, he said. And so what we're really trying to do in District 87 is just shine a spotlight on student achievement. Such improvement in proficiency during one semester sends the right message to parents and taxpayers, Mauser said. I hope it shows that we're focused on the right things, he said following the meeting. And as a parent or a community member, I hope folks have trust in what we're trying to do as a school. We are starting a strategic planning process. We're focused on academics. We're engaging our community. We are trying to make sure that what we're doing ultimately at the end of the day is benefiting our kids in our community for the long haul. And this next story is headlined, Bus Transfer Area Back on Front Street, Dateline Bloomington. Connect Transit is planning to return its downtown transfer area to Front Street starting Monday, January 26. This process will begin with the temporary staging of all downtown buses on the south side of Front Street, starting near Grossinger Motors Arena, and then heading east to the original locations in front of McLean County's Health Building. Health Department, and courthouse buildings. Although buses will return to their regular locations in the coming months, all bus arrivals and departures will occur on the south side of Front Street to avoid ongoing demolition work at the site of the former front and center building. The purple, aqua, orange, and silver lines will be parked outside Grossinger Motors Arena. The gold and red lines will be in front of the McLean County Health Department, and the lime, blue, and green lines will be in front of the McLean County Law and Justice Center, and departure times will not change. And here is today's Flick Fact question. They have rearranged the aisles and product locations at the Sam's Club in Normal, a practice often done that can frustrate shoppers. Do you know the reason why? And the answer is, well, one is obvious, to accommodate more merchandise and better use of space, and the other reason, more subtle. By rearranging its aisles, it keeps shoppers in the warehouse longer, which leads them to explore things that perhaps were not originally on their shopping list and encourages them to try new products. A treasure hunt, as one Sam's employee put it. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Prantigraph of Friday, January 23rd, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.